I'm Robert Stark here, joined in the art studio of Tim Biscuit. Tim, it's great meeting you.
Nice to meet you.
And I also got Francis Nelly joined in.
Hi, guys.
Nice to meet you, Tim.
Yes, nice to meet you, too. Welcome.
So, Tim, where were you born and raised?
I was born in Los Angeles, in Santa Monica, actually. Raised in Woodland Hills / Malibu, kind of back and forth. I had grandparents that lived in Malibu. And then when I was 9, a car drove through our house, and my mom decided that we needed to live in the country, and we moved to Clovis.
And near Fresno.
Yeah.
I briefly lived there.
It's a rough place to be a 9-year-old and a teenager, but yeah, it was interesting.
Oh, what inspired you to become an artist, and how long have you been doing art?
I think growing up watching a lot of cartoons and being around the kind of remnants of modernism in Los Angeles, you know, there's like a Neutra designed market that we went to when I was a kid, and you know, all the signs and design of everything, I think just kind of was really creative back then. So it got me inspired. A lot of trips to Disneyland, a lot of Godzilla movies.
So are you influenced by mid-century modern design?
Yes, absolutely. I think it's ingrained, like these Heller dishes over here are, you know, maybe a little later design. I think they're 70s, but those were, I had a neighbor when I was a kid. My mom was, she will admit, not a great cook, but my neighbor's mom was an amazing cook, and they had those dishes. And I just sort of gravitated towards those. And as I started to kind of collect them, it dawned on me, oh, the reason I love these so much is because I ate really good food off them all when I was growing up. I would just make excuses to go to my friend's house all the time. So I have those kinds of memories of modernism. We lived in, you know, a place where there were a lot of modern houses, like I said, the market and everything. So I think it's just those sort of large expanses of glass and everything. I live in a mid-century modern house, and it feels like home to me, you know.
Tell us about your music, and does your music influence your visual art?
I think it all feels like it's just part of the same aesthetic idea in some way. I tend to experiment a lot and kind of refine my ways of working so that it feels organic, and I do the same thing with, you know, playing music. I you know, use a lot of tape loops and electronics, and I play drums, and I do it all in a way that is not like a difficult process, but sort of very specific. There's difficult parts about it, you know. I used to do tape splicing and build these enormous tape loops and then do multi-track recording on the tape loops. And so I guess it is pretty technical, but it's like a very specific kind of technical. I never, like, you know, I use a very old version of Illustrator in my computer, you know. I don't want a lot of technological advances to happen in my technology, so I think that's why I gravitate towards those teenage engineering things, because they're so intuitive and they're limiting in a way, you know. I used to use a Porta-2 4-track tape machine and a 4-track reel-to-reel when I, you know, that's kind of all I could get at the time, but I would ping pong things back and forth and end up with these crazy edited, orchestrated pieces of music that I like working with limitations, you know.
Tell us about your background in animation.
So I went to art school, and I really didn't like the way that art school in the 80s looked at art. It made me not want to be an artist. And really, I left art school feeling like, well, I guess I'm not going to do that. And then I did music for a long time. And the thing that got me back into art was I was really enjoying doing album covers for the music projects that I was doing. and I had a label and everything. And then when I saw Ren and Stimpy, I was like, oh my God, that's got everything that I always wanted from art in it. And it got me inspired to start drawing again. And it just seemed like a natural transition into animation. And then when I got into animation, it was like what I always wanted from art school, which is just learning to draw really well. And, you know, I got paid to do it. So it was great. I did it for 6 years and I worked in pretty much every studio in Los Angeles and got a great education out of it, I think.
How would you define your artistic style, and what do you mean by the term Baroque modernism?
Oh yeah, that's a good one. So the guy who coined that phrase was he owned a vintage furniture store, and I ran into him. God, I can't remember the guy's name now. We were at a modern furniture show in Palm Springs, and he just said, you know, I think your work is Baroque modernism. And I was like, of course, that makes so much sense, because I have the sort of this tendency to work with shapes that fit with modern architecture and things like that. A lot of, you know, if you look at Corbusier and all these, you know, famous architects, they usually either created their own art to go in their places, or they found art that was very modern and very, you know, gooey and sort of, you know, stretched out forms and so I think in those terms. I work in those with those shapes a lot, but then I have this kind of sense of I always want to add little details to things, these little frilly, you know, little lines and everything. And so if I really kind of do what I'm driven to do, if I make if I keep working on things, they end up having those kind of spacey shapes with tiny little kind of micro blobs and curly things and frilly little decorations all over them. And so I think it's kind of like modernism without minimalism, right? So it's maximum modernism, and Baroque design, you know, was just this crazy overabundance of details.
Tell us about your interest and inspiration from Japanese monster toys.
So growing up watching Godzilla movies on TV, I was kind of I loved them, but I also had horrible nightmares all the time. So it was like that combination of being afraid and entertained and seeing clearly that it's a guy in a suit. It's not really like I wasn't really afraid that they were real. It's just the kind of image that they created, the feeling that they created, was really appealing to me in a sort of weird way. And I never really thought about toys much. I really wasn't a toy guy until I started working in animation, and Craig McCracken, who did, you know, Powerpuff Girls, mm-hmm. and all that stuff with Gendy, had these two Japanese vinyl toys in his office, and I saw them and they were like gargantuas, you know, and I was like blown away. I was like, they were just so horrible looking and so satisfying in how gross they looked. And it made me want to make things like that. And so I kind of have always thought, you know, I want to make toys that are that place between scary and goofy and stupid looking. You know, I like that little spot right in there. So that's what got me into toys.
What are you up to now? Any current projects?
Well, this place is... So a couple of years ago, I was using this place as a storage space, actually the space next door. And for 10 years, I had just had it as a storage space, and there wasn't really much going on in the street. So I did a project in Miami, the one I was telling you about, it was called The Dog, and it was a bar that I just took over the entire bar and covered it with art. And I really, the way that that whole project came together was very impromptu. And so when I came back from doing that project, I just decided to not have a plan, but just to come down here and make something happen in this space. And over the years, I just kept kind of organizing things and building things and turning it into a place where I could just have people come in. And recently took over this space and remodeled it and turned it into a gallery. And now I'm remodeling the space next door. So the space next door is going to be an artist in residence space where I'll be able to have friends from out of town come and stay here, other artists come and do shows, and it's going to be a whole hub of artistic activity. And so knowing that I had this book coming out, which comes out in October, that was a real signpost for me to do this project, knowing that this is going to come out and I'm going to have this kind of, you know, catalog of what I do. And it's a book of my art, but it's got an autobiography in the back. So doing this whole project has been kind of re-examining my career, my past, working on this book for the last couple of years, and now opening a space where I can really do my art and my music and everything exactly the way I want to without really anybody telling me not to. So I have this whole kind of vision of the ideal art career for myself that I've been slowly kind of sculpting, and this place is where it's happening. So
do you have any advice for any struggling artists who would like to make a career out of it?
Do it your own way. Just as long as you're working on, making your art all the time, the more time you can spend making your art, the better you'll get. And whatever weird ideas you have, just follow those, go after them, and figure out a way somehow to make money. Hopefully you can make money doing what you love. For me, it was getting into animation. I knew I didn't want to stay in animation, but I got a lot out of the experience, and I got paid to do the job. I had to train myself for years to be able to get an animation job. So it was I got somewhere along the line, I got some therapy, and my therapist convinced me to bust my ass and get really good at drawing to the point where I could get a job. And I think that's the hardest part about it, is being good at drawing. It's really, really hard to do. You just gotta spend a shitload of time doing it.
Francis, you wanna ask a question?
What's really interesting about your art, that it does have that animation influence. And when I was growing up, I watched a show called Oh Yeah Cartoons.
Oh yeah.
And there was one called Freddie Seymour, your name. And yeah. I was like, what's the story behind that? Mm-hmm. I just found it very interesting.
I think Gerald McBoing Boing was a real inspiration. That sort of way of storytelling, that was really taking a simple idea and making it really graphically simple as well. And, I went into that with this idea that it's just a kid who makes up these insane lies, and they're just, it's just visual storytelling of his insane stories, that at the end kind of turns out that he's actually telling the truth and he's done all these insane things. As I was working on it, I was working within the confines of a studio that's trying to make the next big hit, and they kept making suggestions of what I should do to make the story make more sense and have a backstory. And I really didn't want to do that, but as time went by, I felt like it it got so derailed from what I originally wanted to do that it's like, it was, by the time I was done with it, it was like kind of hard to watch. And I've always thought like that experience, making that cartoon made me realize that I don't want to try and make cartoons because the hardest part about working on anything that takes that many people is that you have to work with that many people, you know? And so for me, I learned that as soon as I start trying to work with a lot of people, it gets exponentially more difficult for me to get what I want. And so now I have my own gallery, you know, I worked on this book with other people, which was great, but it was difficult and it took 4 years to make it. Working on this place, I work with other, I get, you know, somebody to come in and do the electrical stuff and to build things every once in a while. But, you know, I try and do as much as I can myself. So working in animation taught me a lot about the way that big bureaucratic systems destroy art. You know, it led me to be independent.
Sure.
Yeah.
Well, that's interesting because you have shows like Samurai Jack, which is very successful, and they had a fifth season. Yeah. And a lot of people can watch that and think it's like your art, but it's actually kind of, people are still interested in huge animation projects if having the money and funds to do so.
Yeah. Well, like Samurai Jack and Foster's Home for Imaginary Friends, and a lot of those shows, I've had people ask me if I worked on those or if it's my art or something, and I always just say, man, I was inspired by the same things that those guys were inspired by, because we were on the same floor working in the same building. We were looking at literally the same books of like old art, and you know, I used to have these vintage design books that I would bring in, and other people would have theirs, and we would make color copies of each other's work, and we would have the same images pinned up on the wall a lot of times of the things that we were looking at. And so the inspiration was the same. We were all coming from the same place. And so all those shows had I worked on a show called Time Squad. And Time Squad, if you watch that show, you'll see motifs that came from looking at old mid-century modern graphic design that also will appear in Samurai Jack and Foster's, because we're all looking at the same reference. You know, it's kind of like when I first started showing my paintings, somebody looked at one of my pieces and said, oh, it's like Shag, you know? And I was like, Shag, who's Shag? And I looked at his work and we met, and it's like, he's like, yeah, James Flora, right? And I'm like, yeah, James Flora. And he's like, yeah, Gene Deitch. He was looking at Gene Deitch. I was looking at James Flora. They came up together. They were friends, I guess. And like, you know, we kind of made a conscious decision. I mean, I made a conscious decision to kind of take my work in another direction because I didn't want to be compared. I didn't want to be that similar to somebody, you know? So yeah, I mean, inspiration just works that way. And I think the trick for me has always been to let myself take that inspiration and kind of process it and get to a point where it looks like me, you know? I can look at a lot of my work and see other people's work in it, but hopefully other people don't.
I still see a little influence from Miro.
Oh, Miro. Oh yeah, for sure. Yeah. I think, you know, probably the most influential artist in my life has been Roberto Mata. He's a Chilean painter that I feel like there's something about the shapes and the dimensions that he creates that are like connected to some deep part of my soul. and when I first saw his work, it was like looking into my future, you know, looking into a universe that I wanted to exist in. You know, I turned a corner in a museum in Paris when I was 17 years old, and it was like looking into another dimension. It was like I fell into this painting. And so, you know, that era of, you know, Picasso and Miro and all those modernists and surrealists. And I mean, it was that was what I grew up seeing as art. That's what I thought art was, you know? And so I think it just imprinted on me that, you know, when I make art, it looks like that. Cause I just think that's the best art, you know? It's not about the era. It's just about the image, the aesthetic of that time was just good. Yeah.
Tim Biscuit, it's been great talking to you.
It's been great talking to you too. Thanks.